shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
Courageous call! That's on fourth and five!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! Good morning, Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Thursday, September the 13th, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by diehard Miami Dolphins fan, but he's also a radio host up in New York City, John Jastrzemski for 66 WFAN, the largest radio sports radio station in America, and we will break down this week's game between the Miami Dolphins and the New York Jets. John, like I said, he loves the Miami Dolphins, is a diehard Miami Dolphins fan, but he does work in the New York City market and has a good feel and a lot of good information on the Jets and this team. So he's someone who's very good to talk to, as he knows both of these teams very well, and we'll get his insight on this upcoming Sunday's game between the Dolphins and the Jets. That's later on in the podcast. But we got a ton of news to talk about in the world of the Miami Dolphins first. So let's start off with, I guess, the big news story out there right now, and that is the status of Miami Dolphins offensive lineman Josh Sitton. On Wednesday, he did not practice, and he has a shoulder injury. And Adam Gase, in his press conference on Wednesday, said that Sitton took a weird hit on Sunday in the game against the Titans, got banged up a bit, and he's going in, and he's being evaluated, and they're giving him like a whole bunch of tests to see what's wrong exactly and get the status of his shoulder. He did not practice Wednesday. I would doubt he'll practice today on Thursday, but who knows? And his status on Sunday is up in the air at this time. He may not play. And if Josh Sitton's not out there, that's a big blow. That is a big blow to the Miami Dolphins. This offensive line, yes, it's revamped from last year, but the main part is Josh Sitton, as he is a Pro Bowl level player. And if he's not out there, this offensive line is going to look very similar to the one that was out there in 2017. And I'm not sure that's a very good thing. So Sitton and his health is something we're going to keep an eye on, you know, the rest of the day here on Thursday. And maybe by the time most of you are listening to this, there will have been an update out on the status of Sitton. But at the time I'm recording this very early on Thursday morning, that's the latest, is that his status for the game on Sunday is up in the air, and there's no word on what's wrong with his shoulder. Hopefully it's minor, and this isn't something that's going to sort of sideline him for any length of time. I guess best case is he plays Sunday. Right after that is it's a minor injury, nothing to be too worried about, and I guess worst case is this is something that's going to be long-term. So hopefully we'll have more information here in the next 24 to 48 hours. But like I said, if Sitton's not out there this week, that's a big blow. The Jets, their front seven isn't bad, and it's actually very good, and you're going to have to deal with guys like Leonard Williams. And, you know, you're going to want Sitton out there, and you're going to want him out there on this offensive line, because the Jets front seven is very good. They had their way with the Lions on Monday night, and, you know, it's only week two. And this was a concern with Sitton when Miami signed him. His age and where he was in his NFL career is he's not that young. He's a bit of an older player. And, you know, hopefully it's a lot to do about nothing, but I'm sure we'll have more info in the coming days. Another player who did not practice on Wednesday was wide receiver Danny Amendola. But this is planned, and there's nothing to be concerned about here. Again, he's someone who's up there in age on the wrong side of 30, and they're going to limit him, and they're going to be smart about this, it sounds like, because Adam Gase, in his press conference on Wednesday, said the plan is for Amendola to take off every Wednesday all season. So every Wednesday this season, Amendola will not practice. He's going to use it as a rest day, and that's smart, because Amendola has a injury history in his past. He is a little bit older, and you know, he's a key part for this Dolphins offense. I know he didn't see a lot of balls his way this past Sunday, But I think moving forward, you know, he might be that safety blanket type guy for Ryan Tannehill as we move forward here in 2018. And the last thing we need is to overwork him in practices all week to the point where you're sort of putting a lot of wear and tear on his body. So I have no problem with this. Amendola is a veteran. He will prepare himself each week to play on Sunday. I have no worries about that at all. And I think this is very smart by the Miami Dolphins and by Amendola to sort of, you know, the practices are just practices, folks. He gets paid to show up on Sunday and make plays. And if taking off every Wednesday this year prepares his body to be ready every Sunday, I have no problem with it. And I think that's very smart. I guess the other news is Miami Dolphins long snapper, John Nenni, who's played in 209 consecutive games, which is absolutely amazing. Per multiple reports, he will play this Sunday. Now, he didn't practice on Wednesday, and he still is banged up per head coach Adam Gase, but he will play Sunday. And for insurance, the Miami Dolphins did sign to their practice squad the long snapper Lucas Gravel. I hope I said his name right. It might be Gravel. I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced. And I think they had an open spot on the practice squad, so they did sign him on Tuesday just in case. Because, like I said, the emergency long snapper usually is Mike Hall. Well, Mike Hall is on IR right now, and who knows if he'll even play this year. So after that, it was Durham Smythe, the tight end. But he really is, you know, he hasn't done a lot of long snapping in a while. So the Miami Dolphins need some insurance here in case Dennehy's injury is something to be concerned about long term. So, but it does sound like he will play this week, and that's good news because, you know, the one thing you don't want to worry about is who your long snapper is, especially when you have a rookie place kicker. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this next topic, but I will touch on this topic before we get to John Jastrzemski here from WFAN in New York City, and that is Devontae Parker. You know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time ranting and raving on this, but he did practice on Wednesday. Well, we don't know if he did a full practice. In the session that was open to the media, he was out there catching balls with his right hand wrapped up, and he was participating in the individual drills. Once the media had to leave practice, for those of you who don't know, in season, the media is allowed to watch practice at the start for a certain amount of time, and then they must leave. So for the open part of the practice, Devontae Parker had his right hand wrapped up. He was catching passes and participating in the individual drills. And from reports, there's no word if he will play Sunday. That is very much up in the air right now. Armando Salguero wrote a great article up at the Miami Herald. Everyone should go to miamiherald.com. Read this article from Armando, as he goes in-depth about this. And a couple things here. First off, there's pretty much three things that the Miami Dolphins are looking for before they put Devontae Parker on the field. Well, there's really four, but let's get to the three main ones in Armando's article. They are, is his conditioning sort of where it needs to be? Because he got hurt in training camp, and, you know, he's been out, and he really hasn't been participating in any drills here for, you know, a few weeks now. So where is his conditioning? If he does play, what's the risk level on him re-injuring this finger that was broken? They don't want to rush him out there just to have him, you know, play a few downs. Next thing you know, his finger is re-injured or it's worse than it was before. So they want to make sure the hand's ready and the finger's ready to go. And they also want to know how close is he truly to 100%, which I guess sort of ties into the first two. But those are the three things they're looking at, is where is his conditioning and his finger. How far along is it? How close is it to being 100%? And what's the re-injury factor here? Adam Gase in his press conference did say Devontae Parker will not step on the field and play until he at least practices one day for the Dolphins. And right now it's Thursday. I am recording this before the Miami Dolphins have their practice. So no word if he did practice on Thursday. We should know that by tomorrow. I'm guessing by Friday we'll know for sure one way or the other if Parker's playing on Sunday. If I had to guess today, I would think Parker misses the Jets game, but is probably out there for the Raiders game, week three at home. That's just a guess. Just from everything that I'm reading here and from Armando's article and all the reports and what Adam Gase said in his press conference on Wednesday. It does seem like that would be the logic here, that he will probably miss this Jets game, but he will be ready for the Week 3 Raiders game. I think that's where I can, if you read between the lines, that's where things are heading. Now, when it comes to Parker, he is, look, on social media, on all forms of it, Parker is a polarizing figure. I will say right now, from what I'm seeing and reading, most of the Miami Dolphins fans are really down on Parker. Now, look, if you listen to this podcast, you know I'm really down on him, and there's probably nobody who's as down on him as me, but it seems like the Miami Dolphins fan base is sort of fed up with Devontae Parker at this point, and Joe Shad, who last week I sort of talked about as he was defending Parker, you know, today he was back on social media, and I don't know if Shad's being paid by Parker and his family or his agent, but he was still defending him even more. He put up a tweet that sort of riled up the Miami Dolphins fan base where, let's see what it says, and this is from Joe Shad's Twitter account, any Dolphins fans hoping Devontae Parker doesn't come back this week because they like the team's other receivers, .. And then he put a picture of a young girl rolling her eyes. Joe, again, I love you. You do great work at the Palm Beach Post. You really do. You do amazing work. I'm a big fan of your work. Last week, you wrote the thing about Parker, and I ripped you. I'm going to rip you again. Devontae Parker has done nothing in his 3 years for the Miami Dolphins to make you think he's good. And you're sitting here, and once again, and then Joe, after that tweet, a few minutes later, puts up a video of YouTube clips of Devontae Parker's 2017 highlights, which is probably about three in reality. Most of those clips aren't highlights. Joe, you're not helping your case any. In 2017, Devontae Parker had one touchdown in total garbage time that meant nothing. There were no Devontae Parker highlights in 2017, okay? There were none, Joe. So, again, I like Joe, but his take on Devontae Parker is so wrong and so off. And Joe's welcome to come on this podcast anytime. I will debate him on this. I know Joe a little bit. I have talked to him in the past. He's welcome to come on. I will debate him on this. But he's just wrong. I mean, Devontae Parker in 3 years in the NFL has done literally nothing except get injured on a consistent basis and always just not be a consistent player. Week in and week out, you never know what you're going to get with this guy. There was the Armando Salguero article from probably about a month back now saying, you know, the first 3 years in this league, this guy was eating fast food in the morning for breakfast, eating fast food at night for dinner, and staying up to all hours of the night playing video games. And it just took to this offseason for the light bulb to go off, which is no shock, his contract year, let's just call it what it is, for him to sort of, you know, eat healthy, you know, put in some extra work, training, go to bed at a normal hour, you know, give me a break. Joe, Devontae Parker has lost the benefit of the doubt and all sympathy with the vast majority of the Miami Dolphins fans. Sure, there's a couple here and a couple there who are still holding out hope, thinking this guy's the second coming of Lord knows who, but he's just not. He's not a good football player. You want to look at the stats. They're absolutely awful. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, Devontae Parker is a threat when he's on the field because he's really tall, he's really fast, he's got long arms, but he does nothing with it. And you know what? I think the rest of the Miami Dolphins wide receivers, what I see from them is I see max effort all the time out of guys like Jakeem Grant. I see max effort all the time out of guys like Albert Wilson. I see max effort all the times out of guys like Kenny Stills. I don't see that ever out of Devontae Parker. I mean, sometimes it seems like he's moving at half speed, like he doesn't even carry down the field. And it's like those guys produce. I see those guys make plays, help the team win games. Not so much the new guys, but in the past, even when Landry was here, you know, he helped the team win games, gave max effort, produced. Stills gives max effort, produced. Jakeem Grant, you know, the little he was on the field last year, he still caught more touchdowns than Devontae Parker. Grant last year, two touchdowns, Devontae Parker one. I mean, that's all you need to know. Guys like that are actually out there busting their butt, making plays, helping the team win games. And Devontae Parker, you know, when he does play every other week, or roughly about that, you know, does nothing. He does nothing. Joe keeps defending him. God bless him. And look, and once again, when all said and done, I hope I'm wrong about this. I hope DeVante Parker, when he does get on the field this year, whatever week, you know, is the guy we all hope and think he can be. I hope he proves me wrong. I would love nothing more than to come back here, eat my words, and say, I was wrong. Joe Shad was 100% right. But until I see it with my own eyes, and I haven't seen it in 3 years, so I'm not holding my breath to think I'm going to see it this year in year four, it's like you're waiting. It's like waiting around for death. You know it's going to come eventually, but you don't know when Parker's going to play well because it almost never happens. It's a long wait. You wait, you wait, you wait. It's like, how much longer are we going to wait? So the fans who are down on Parker, Joe, if you want to argue with them on social media, go for it. But it's like, I don't know what leg you have to stand on. The numbers speak for themselves. His performance speaks for itself. You read the article from Armando Salguero. It's like, the guy just doesn't seem to care to be a professional NFL player with his off-the-field habits when it comes to diets and workouts. So we'll see. But Parker, his status is up in the air for Sunday. I guess he might play. Again, I've been saying this on the podcast for a few weeks. I would be in no rush to bring him back on the field. What I saw this past Sunday from Stills, Wilson, Amendola, and Grant, I saw guys make plays and that were good enough. That wide receiver group right there, it's not the best in the league, but it sure as heck ain't the worst. And it's, I would say, that group without DeVante Parker is probably, you know, middle of the pack, probably middle of the pack wide receiver group in the NFL. Sure, when Parker's on and he's healthy, he makes that group a lot better. But, I mean, again, when has he ever done it? When has he ever done it? So we'll see. I'm sure we'll know about Parker by Friday. If he hasn't practiced by Friday, then there's no chance he'll play. But like I said, my guess is probably week three against the Raiders, just reading between the lines and how much he's out there participating in the individual drills. So I'm going to take a quick break. And after the break, I will be joined by John Jastrzemski from 66 WFAN in New York City. Again, he's a diehard fan of the Miami Dolphins. He works in the New York City radio market on the biggest sports radio station in the country, and he knows the Jets. He is around the Jets, hears all about the Jets, follows the Jets, talks to people with the Jets. So he's someone good to talk about because he's a fan of the Dolphins. He works in the market with the Jets to get his thoughts on this upcoming week two game between the Miami Dolphins and the New York Jets. So sit tight, and we'll be joined by John Jastrzemski right after this.
DolphinsTalk.com is your one-stop source for anything and everything Miami Dolphins. From the award-winning DolphinsTalk.com podcast to original commentary, breaking news, and interviews with current and former players as well as media types, DolphinsTalk.com keeps you up to date and informed with all the latest happenings taking place in the world of the Miami Dolphins. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Dolphins Talk and to check us out at DolphinsTalk.com every day for all your Miami Dolphins needs.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is John Jastrzemski, the host of JJ After Dark on 66 WFAN in New York City, but he is also a diehard fan of the Miami Dolphins. John, how are you doing tonight?
Mike, I'm fantastic, and I'm definitely doing a lot better with the Miami Dolphins 1-0, and a big week ahead, man, as you get ready for the New York Jets, who looked very impressive against the Detroit Lions.
They did, but let's talk about the Miami Dolphins first. Week one game, what was your big takeaway from that game? I thought, coming out of that game, the one thing that really does hit you over the head is when head coach Adam Gase has Ryan Tannehill under center. They just seem to win more games. Shockingly enough, when he has his guy under center, they win games because how 2016 ended, and then this past week, they win with him, and when he's not there, they just don't.
Well, I think that's totally fair. And look, I thought it was a complete effort from the Dolphins across the board. And you think about two things that they didn't have last year. You hit on one, Ryan Tannehill. The other would be the fact that you had a defense that was doing what it's supposed to do, enforcing turnovers. And you want to win games in this league, you got to win the turnover margin. And I know that the Dolphins were dealing with a backup quarterback at the end of that game, but they made Marcus Mariota look terrible. And if you look from Rashad Jones to Kiko Alonso to Minka Fitzpatrick, I thought there was a whole lot to like, Mike, about the way the Dolphin defense competed.
Absolutely. And I think the big takeaway there, too, is Minkah Fitzpatrick does not look like a rookie out there. Minkah Fitzpatrick is a heck of a tackler, and it seems like he's always in the right place at the right time. You know, I have a podcast on every day where I talk to all the media people in South Florida, and every report on him since the draft has been, this kid loves football. He does his homework. He just loves the game. And it showed on Sunday as he was in the right place every time, and he was making stops. Big stops, like the fourth down stop at the 1 yard line there. He just looked fantastic.
No doubt. And look, that's why you drafted him in the first round. You want him to be a difference maker right out of the gate. And you think about the Dolphins and the struggles they have covering guys in the slot, and especially covering the tight end over the last couple of years. You know, your hope is that Minkah Fitzpatrick, being an elite level talent coming over from Alabama, would be able to have that sort of impact. So I thought it was great to see. Look, I don't think you can judge Fitzpatrick in his rookie year and his rookie year alone, but I think he's got a chance to be a really good player.
Yep, absolutely. And the Miami Dolphins this year really are relying on a lot of young players and rookies in some spots. They have the two rookies at tight end in Smythe and Gesicki. They got the linebackers that they start in Raekwon, who essentially is a rookie because he missed all last year, and Jerome Baker, Fitzpatrick, and even the place kicker, Jason Sanders. They got a lot of rookies in a lot of key spots, and I think that is something that we're going to have to watch every week to see how they sort of handle being guys who play such large roles in this team week in and week out.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, but, you know, I think it's an okay factor for the Dolphins. I don't think that's something that will – make or break their year. I think a couple of things you got to look at: the health and the status of this offensive line. And you definitely don't like the fact, Mike, that Josh Sitton did not practice here on Wednesday. He's a big key to this team. They need him out there. The other thing you got to watch is the health of Ryan Tannehill. Like you said, they're a different team when Tannehill is out there. You want Tannehill playing for 16 games. And I thought all in all, in his debut here this year, for the most part, he did not look like a guy who hadn't played a football game in about, I don't know, 19 weeks, if you count going back to the end of 2016.
Yep, absolutely. And another thing I thought was very interesting to see was, now with life after Landry, how they sort of spread out the passes to the wide receivers. And it was pretty much what I thought, that everyone was going to get, you know, 4, 5, or 6 receptions. And that's pretty much what it was. Of course, Kenny Stills had the big long touchdown pass. That was a huge play. But overall, they spread the ball around, and I think that's something else to watch, too, with Miami as they move forward. There's talk that Devontae Parker might come back this week. Don't know. And even with him, you don't really know what you get with him each week. But what were your thoughts on the wide receivers there?
You know, I got to be honest. I thought after 1 week, it looked terrific. Now, to your point, the Dolphins are going to look to spread the ball around. I don't think they're going to have an alpha male necessarily dominating the amount of looks, dominating the amount of catches and whatnot. But if you look at the group of Stills, Amendola, Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant, there's a lot to like. The only knock on those guys is you don't have that big physical presence. That's where Devontae Parker could play a role. But wake me up when Devontae Parker is actually going to be able to stay healthy and be productive. Because, you know, we know he has the talent. It's about putting it all together. But I thought, as far as spreading the ball around, not knowing who was going to beat you, that was exactly what the Dolphins had in mind when they put this offense together, what you saw in the first game of the year.
Yep, absolutely, and it worked well. And I am very excited to see more from Albert Wilson, because I thought they used him just right on Sunday, and I think they can do a lot more with him. So he's the guy I really want to see, because I think they can expand his role a lot, because he is very explosive, and he reminds me a little bit of Landry, just without the nonsense sometimes that's around Landry with the penalties and stuff.
Well, listen, I think he's faster than Jarvis Landry. I don't think his hands are as good. I don't think he's going to be as good on third down, but he can be that sort of threat for the offense. And, you know, when I think about questions going into the year, Mike, it's funny. You lose Landry, you lose Sue, you lose Pouncey. A lot of people look at Jarvis Landry, and I get it, popular player. I really liked him. He's got it, had a very good couple of years for the program and for the team as a whole. But he's, to me, the least of their questions. I don't look at this group of wide receivers and question, oh, they're going to miss Jarvis Landry, they're going to miss this, they're going to miss that. No, I think they have enough there. The other questions I have with this team, the run defense being able to capitalize and execute on third down, those were questions that were answered in a positive way after the first week. We're going to have to wait and see if that continues.
Yeah, I think the run defense is first and foremost, and that sort of leads into this week's game with the Jets, because I thought Tennessee gave up on the run in that game, which I didn't really understand, because Miami's weakness on that side of the ball clearly is the front seven. And this week, the Jets, I think, with their head coach, he ain't going to give it up. I mean, he will run the ball, and I think that's where Miami's going to have a tough test this week. Let's start there with the Jets' offense. Before we talk about the quarterback, which I know that's a big deal right now in New York, skill position-wise, at wide receiver, the Jets, they really don't have a lot, but they can run the ball. What's your take on the Jets' offense being someone who's around the team up there in New York City?
Mike, I think they're a little better than you think, and I'm going to give you a key guy to watch on Sunday, and I think he's a key guy for the Jets throughout this year. It's Quincy Enunwa. He's coming back from the neck injury, which pushed him on the IR. 2 years ago, he was having a breakout year. He was on his way to basically getting about 1,000 yards. Clearly, the guy that Minkah Fitzpatrick, I bet he is matched up with. He's a guy that I think Sam Darnold's going to look for on third down. I think he is the possession-type receiver that will move the chains for the Jets. Anderson is your home run hitter. He caught a big touchdown on Monday night. And as far as the Jets running the football, it's a two-headed monster with Isaiah Crowell, the former Cleveland Brown, and Bilal Powell, who's been a guy that has given the Dolphins a hard time. You go back to the game last year, he had some success. You go back 2 years ago, he had some success. So that's a guy to watch to me. Enunwa in the slot, Powell on third down. Those are the guys you got to contend.
Yep, and I think the Jets, yeah. I like their offense. I think at the skill positions at wide receiver, they're not, I mean, it's not bad. It's just not nothing that puts a lot of fear, I would think, into opponents. But that sort of leads to the quarterback, Sam Darnold. I'm sure he is the talk all week in New York City. I'm sure everyone at your station, I'm sure Joe and Evan are ready to put him into the Hall of Fame right now. Sam Darnold, obviously the first pass of the game was horrible. But after that pass, he calmed down. And he did play a heck of a game. What were your thoughts on Sam Darnold against the Lions?
I thought it was a terrific rookie debut. After that pick six, you're expecting the worst. And it's going to sound crazy. I actually am more impressed by Darnold throwing the pick six and bouncing back the way that he did, as opposed to seeing him, let's say, just throw four touchdowns and have a ho-hum, adversity-free type of first game. I thought it was great to see him bounce back after the adversity, because that's what – you're going to have to deal with when you're playing in the NFL. And look, I was very high on the draft pick. I think the Jets, you know, hit a home run here. They got a guy they can build with for years to come. But I think the Jets fans got to be rational. You got to understand with Sam Darnold, there are going to be ups, there are going to be downs. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. You want to hit him. And that's one thing I noticed in the last game that he played against Detroit, not a whole lot of pressure from the Lions front seven. That's where the Dolphins, with Cameron Wake and with Robert Quinn and with all the guys they want to shuffle in and out, bingo, on that front four, you got to find a way to get pressure and make sure that that quarterback is forced to make those quick decisions. And it will hopefully, for the Dolphins' sake, lead to some mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I said that on the podcast yesterday, that Sam Darnold played great week one. He really did. And I'm with you. I mean, he fell into their lap. And I think the Giants might be regretting this in a few years. He fell right in their lap. And there's nothing to knock about the way he played on Monday night. But the Lions were an absolute mess. They looked so lost and confused. Matt Patricia, you know, I know it's his first game ever. He just, you know, he struggled, I think. And I also think the Lions, they have someone we know very well, Paul Pasqualoni, calling their plays on defense, who he sort of flamed out in Miami as well in that role. I just think it was a perfect storm for him to play well. And this week, if I'm the Dolphins, they have to get pressure on him. They have to hit him. They have to rattle him. They have to make his life hell, essentially, because I think they can rattle him, because he's still a rookie, second game ever, first home start, short week. They can rattle him, I think, and I think that's a big key for Miami this week.
Got it. And I think on the other side of the ball, it's about that Dolphin offensive line holding up and performing the way that they did in week one. You've got to look for that balanced attack to try and win you the ball game. The Dolphins won last week because they were very unpredictable on offense. They had great success with Drake and with Frank Gore. They made big plays in the pass game. They were very good on third down. Got to see all of that.
Okay, so, yeah. Speaking about Miami's offense this week, I think you're right. I think they have to have a nice attack, and I think I would like to see more from Drake. Adam Gase there, he sort of got away from Drake this week, and he sort of fell in love with the passing game, as he does at times. But this week, I think you're right. They need a balanced attack on offense, and I want to see the ball in the hands of Drake a little bit more.
Yeah, I want to see both of those running backs utilized. I mean, Drake, is we know what he's capable of doing. When he is right, look at that game against New England last year, the game against Denver, dual threat, making big plays, love it. But then to have that veteran presence of Frank Gore, it's exactly what you want. Time of possession, you know, capitalize on third downs. That, to me, is the winning formula. You want to take care of the ball. I mean, look, the turnover margin for the Dolphins last week, a winning formula. Sounds simplistic, but I think they're key ingredients. You want to get off to a fast start.
Yep. So who do you like in this week's game? I think it's going to be a tight game. It's like a field goal type game either way, low scoring. I don't see a lot of points with these offenses. Last week I did pick the Titans to win, and I was so happy I was wrong. This week I actually think Miami's going to inch this one out. I think Sam Darnold comes back to earth a little bit, and Miami's pass rush will give him fits. So I like Miami close in the low scoring game. What do you think? What do you think about this week's game?
Yeah, we're in agreement on this one. Now, look, I'm not in love with the pick. I think it's a
flip
game. I think it's a toss-up game. I'm going to take the Dolphins. I'm going to go with the pass rush. I'm going to go with a secondary that should be able to feast and make a couple of plays on a rookie quarterback. But the Dolphins are going to have to do two things. They got to run the football effectively, and they got to win that turnover margin. They do that, they'll win the football game on Sunday.
Yep, and looking at, just looking around the league, what was the biggest surprise just around the league in general from week one in your eyes?
Wow, that's a good question. I'd probably say it's Tampa Bay sticking it to New Orleans the way that they did. The one thing I'll say about that game, when you have those teams in the NFC South that know each other as well as they do, you get some wacky, unpredictable upsets. So that's why even a team like Tampa, who looks by far and away the fourth best team within that division, they're dangerous in any single one of those games. I think it will be very telling for New Orleans the following week how they come back. If New Orleans plays poorly against Cleveland this week, I'd be very concerned. If New Orleans bounces back, I think you basically attribute that performance to being an anomaly. You take it from there, and you see how the Saints are going to look. But I would say the biggest surprise, Tampa sticking it to the Saints with 48 points, and then Aaron Rodgers
Coming back and winning again. Yeah, absolutely. I think, yes, I'm with it there with Tampa Bay. And this week's game between Tampa and Philadelphia is going to be very telling for each team, because Philadelphia won week one, but Foles, he didn't look so good. And you know they want to rest Wentz as much as possible and not rush him back. And if Philadelphia's offense sort of struggles this week, they're going to be itching to get Wentz on the field maybe sooner than they want. And Tampa, if they ever beat Philadelphia this week, they will be the talk of the NFL come Monday morning. Everyone, when you open up with wins over the Saints and Philadelphia, everyone will be talking about Tampa Bay.
No doubt. And you know what the topic of conversation will be? Do you stick with Ryan Fitzpatrick?
You got to stick with him. You got to stick with him.
And listen, you beat Philadelphia, you're going to have a lot of people making that argument. That's for sure.
Yep. And I would say the other surprise, although not much of a surprise, is how bad the Buffalo Bills, who made the playoffs last year, were. Now, look, I thought they'd be bad. I didn't think they'd be that bad. And I think they're on the verge of a just miserable season, because I don't see how they're going to just score points with that offensive line, with the quarterbacks they have, why they traded A.J. McCarron so late in the game when they did, when they knew their other two options were a young rookie who needed time and Nate Peterman, who was miserable last year. I mean, I knew they'd be bad. I didn't think they'd be that bad.
No argument there. I think Buffalo is the worst team in the league. When you lose three starters on the line, when you have horrific quarterback play and a defense that, quite frankly, overachieved last year, tough to duplicate those results. So, yeah, I'm with you there. Give me Buffalo as the worst team in the league. And that's something the Dolphins, they want to be a playoff team this year. They got to take advantage, and they got to beat them twice.
They got to beat them twice. They got to sweep them. And, yeah, I think they're like a one-win team, if that even. I mean, they're really bad. Last question, which I know probably only you and me care about. Not many Miami Dolphins fans listening. This weekend, we got Syracuse versus Florida State. If the Cuse ever won this one, they're probably on their way to a bowl because they'd be halfway there. I like what SU has done this year, the first few games. Florida State's still Florida State, and anybody writing them off, and a lot of people are sort of writing them off, I think are out of their minds. What's your take on this game? It's in the dome at noon. It's supposed to be warm outside, which means it'll be sweltering inside. How do you like this game?
I think it's a fascinating game. I mean, for Syracuse, to me, it's a statement game. You want to show that you've made progress as a program. You got a big, bad powerhouse that's wounded coming into your building. How are you going to respond? How are you going to be able to handle that? Unfortunately, in my opinion, I think you're going to get an angry, ticked-off Florida State MLT.
I think so, too, actually.
I'd be very surprised if Syracuse won this game. I think Florida State wins by about two scores, give or take. But I'll tell you this, Mike. Syracuse wins this game, you're absolutely right. They're finding their way to a bowl.
Yep, and the past few years, they surprised Virginia Tech at home. And then last year, of course, they surprised Clemson at home. This year, they're not going to surprise a team like Florida State because they're probably ready for us a little bit. But it's good. Yeah, I think the game – I think you're right. I think Florida State, if they show up, they got way better players all across the board. But if they don't and if they continue to struggle, especially on offense, this game might be closer. This game probably could go down to the wire, though.
Looking forward to it. Nice weekend of football. Florida State Absolutely. And the Dolphins and the Jets on Sunday.
Absolutely. That's my weekend. So, JJ, thanks so much for a few minutes of your time tonight. Everyone, be sure to listen to John Jastrzemski on 66 WFAN in New York City. And the show is JJ After Dark. And also follow him on Twitter at John_Jastrzemski. I'll have the link up because I know it's a tough last name to spell. I'll have the link up on the site. Everyone can just click it and follow John. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
All right, you got it. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
The London and Jeff Show is a brand new Miami Dolphins podcast here on DolphinsTalk.com. Jeff is a 3-time Emmy Award-winning TV producer, and London is his 12-year-old son. Both are diehard Miami Dolphins fans who have their unique perspective on the team and the happenings taking place with the Miami Dolphins. Be sure to check out the Landon and Jeff Show exclusively right here at DolphinsTalk.com.
Once again, I would like to thank John Jastrzemski from 66 WFAN in New York City for joining us on the podcast and giving a few moments of his time to talk about the Miami Dolphins and this upcoming week's game against the Jets. Now, I'm going to close the show talking about a controversial topic, which I know many of you hate when I talk it about, and that's the NFL players taking a knee for national anthem. Marco Rubio, the center from Florida, sort of chimed in on that today regarding the Miami Dolphins and Kenny Stills. So I'm going to save that for the very, very end, because I know, look, if you don't want to listen to it, you've heard the entire show, and you can just click it off and not listen to it. For those of you who do want to listen to it, just stay tuned to the very end, and I will sort of talk about that at the end for a few minutes. So I guess, let me just say, we'll have a podcast on Friday where I will break down this Week 2 game between the Jets and the Dolphins and give my official prediction on the game. If you want, please make sure to follow us on Twitter at Dolphins Talk. We got a ton of new articles up on the website, so please check out DolphinsTalk.com. We also have a new Fins Up, Fans Down podcast that's up on the website, as well as a new Landon and Jeff show that right now is up on the website. So check those two shows out as well. On Sunday morning, we will have the Countdown to Kickoff show with Tom Earnessy. So you're going to want to check that out. But that's all for today's show. Now, I'm going to close out here with the Marco Rubio comment on the Miami Dolphins taking a knee. So if you don't want to hear it, click off. If you want to listen, here's my thoughts on it. So for those of you who don't know, the senator from Florida, Marco Rubio, big-time Republican senator, ran for president in 2016, got into it, of course, with Trump. He put out a tweet on September 12th at 11:30 in the morning, and he retweeted a tweet from Miami Dolphins wide receiver Kenny Stills, who spent Tuesday of this week volunteering his time with some veterans and stuff. And Marco Rubio put up a tweet saying, "No NFL player does more community service than Kenny Stills of the Miami Dolphins. You don't have to agree with how or why he has chosen to exercise the First Amendment before every game to acknowledge the hours he gives voluntarily on his day off to serve his fellow Americans. And Marco Rubio is 100% spot on, dead accurate, right. Kenny Stills, I don't care where you fall on his taking a knee, not taking a knee stuff. You can hate the players for taking a knee. You can whatever. You have to give Kenny Stills credit. He talks the talk. He walks the walk. Kenny Stills ain't just taking a knee to get attention. Kenny Stills ain't just taking a knee just to be a guy taking a knee. Kenny Stills puts his time and his money where his mouth is, or in this case, where his knee is, I guess you could say. And on his time off, nobody does more charity work on the Miami Dolphins right now than Kenny Stills. Michael Thomas, when he was with the Dolphins, he was right there with them most weeks last year. Of course, he's now with the Giants. But Kenny Stills, week in, week out, year round, does more volunteer work, more community service work, just tries to improve the community, raise awareness for certain causes. And Marco Rubio, it was nice to see a politician for once. I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're an independent. I don't care if you're a Democrat. As a human being, it's nice to see a politician who, you know, most people these days don't think very highly of any of them, you know, point out the obvious and give an NFL player some credit. Because when it comes to taking a knee, it's become a polarizing topic. Trump has made it a polarizing topic. And, you know, he calls them sons of bitches. You got to fire them. All that stuff. Again, I don't care what side of the aisle you fall on. But to see Marco Rubio publicly support one of the guys who takes a knee and has been taking a knee now for, what, 3 years, I think? Maybe, if not more. It was refreshing to see. But I will say this about Marco Rubio. I hope his motives here are pure. Because right now, after the Nike commercial, it seems like on this issue, the tide is starting to turn a little in that more people are feeling more comfortable coming out publicly, supporting Colin Kaepernick, supporting Nike. And I hope that Marco Rubio is not just sort of trying to ride that wave to be like, yep, I support the guys who kneel now too. Because a few other people have now. Nike took a big leap, and it hasn't seemed to hurt them. So I want to be sort of ride that train. I don't know what's in his heart, Marco Rubio. I don't know what he believes. I've never met the man. Don't know nothing about the man other than what I see on TV. But I hope it's pure, and I'm choosing to say it is. And hopefully Marco Rubio, because Marco Rubio, here's why I think it is pure. And I will defend him real quick here. Why it's pure is, if he says nothing, then Marco Rubio has an easy day here on this topic. And, you know, he's great. He doesn't have to defend a side one way or the other. By him saying what he said, you know he is alienating and, for lack of a better word, pissing off a lot of Republicans, a lot of Trump supporters, and a lot of people who just hate the NFL players for taking a knee. So Marco Rubio is upsetting half of the voters in the state of Florida by saying what he said here about Stills. And he didn't have to say it. So that's why I think what Marco Rubio did is pure. I've never been a huge Marco Rubio fan, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, tip of the cap for this. Kudos to him. It's nice to see a politician sort of go out on a limb here and take a stance on this issue that might not be the most popular stance. And he didn't have to say anything at all. And if he did it, you know, he's got a quiet day and nobody's asking him about this topic on September 12th. Because really, it's been an issue that, yes, it gets talked about every now and then, but it's sort of, it's still out there. But, you know, aside from Trump, the NFL, and the players, it's not something that, like, a lot of other people sort of get, I would say a lot of other politicians sort of get wrapped up in. So for Marco Rubio to sort of say what he said here, you know, I give him credit. And what he said was right. Kenny Stills, you know, does amazing work. And if you hate that he takes a knee every week, that you are entitled to that opinion. But know the facts. Follow him on social media. Read the articles. Know where he is and what he's doing in the community. If you still want to hate him, that's fine. But if you think he's just another one of these guys who's taking a knee just to take a knee and he's not putting up his own money or his own time to make things better in this country, you're a jackass, because the guy gives more of his time than any NFL player I've ever seen. I've been following this sport. God, I'm an old man now. I'm in my 40s. I've been following the sport for a long time. And you can't knock him for that. Kenny Stills tries to make this country better, tries to make his community where he lives better, and that's a good thing. And the NFL needs more people like Kenny Stills, not less. I don't care if he takes a knee or not. So that's my little rant on that, and I wanted to end the show for those of you who are still listening. So that's that. So everyone have a great Thursday, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.